Welcome back to 24 Hours of Student Power, 24 Hours of Student Programming at UBC. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting on unceded traditional lands of the Musqueam people. And up next, we have the Sexual Assault Support Center with Nikki and Tintin.
Hello. Yeah, my name is Tintin. I'm an outreach worker at the SASC, or Sexual Assault Support Center, and here's Nikki.
Hi, my name is Nikki, and I'm also an outreach worker at the Sexual Assault Support Center.
I know that we already had a land acknowledgement, but I also wanted to acknowledge that we are located on the ancestral unceded territory of the Hunkaminam-Speaking Coast Musqueam people. I think it's important with the work that we do at the SASC because obviously sexual violence and colonization are very deeply connected and have a very rooted and ongoing history and like legacy, that is to say.
We have with the acknowledgement that Indigenous women, Two-Spirit and trans Indigenous folks suffer at higher or face higher rates of sexual violence than do other counterparts. Mm-hmm.
So what are we going to talk about? That's a great question. We wanted to kind of talk about some of the stuff that had happened over the summer, just in brief for the most part, but I don't know, just kind of paying tribute and homage to the amazing organizing work that the community had done to mm-hmm. pretty much ensure that the SASC is still alive and breathing for the most part now, and yeah, and the support work that we have is still here.
Totally, and what could have been lost, but what thankfully was not lost because of community organizing and community outreach that happened when the June 22nd closures on part of the AMS against the support services at the SASC happened. I wanted to thank GRSJ undergrads because they were the ones that created the petition, and I think they 2,000 signatures. I bet I could even find it. But they, like, it was like thousands of signatures.
Yeah. Over like the course of like 3 days.
Over the course of, yeah, it was 3 days. Closures happened, and 3 days later it was, what's it called?
Retracted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In part because of the petition, but also because of the series of demands written by the resource groups, in particular the Social Justice Center, who was obviously particularly outraged by it and wrote a series of demands from the AMS.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, highlighting many different things, but also more transparency regarding the SASC too, mm-hmm. which also led to the town hall.
So I think that those are mostly our campus, like, organizational supports, but also, like, individuals who've, like, mm-hmm. tweeted, talked
professors,
about
Dr.
It
Sarah Hunt, I was going to name too. Dr. Sarah Hunt in the First Nations and Indigenous Studies Department was a huge ally, has been mm-hmm. a huge ally to the SASC, and I particularly noticed that when the closures happened, she was a huge, huge ally and an advocate for us, and she's an Indigenous woman, and obviously violence on the land is violence on the body, and that's mm-hmm. that's part of her academic work too, so I really wanted to, like, give a shout out to her. Thanks, Sarah Hunt.
Yeah, so what did, so do we want to run through some of the statistics, I guess?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in part, the support team, Melissa Singh, who's the support and advocacy coordinator at the SASC, and our manager, Sandra Swasnawar, two brilliant women of color, put together a little statement about the SASC, about the SASC advocacy program, and then some statistics I guess I could read. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to read the first blurb and you read the second blurb?
Sure.
Okay, sounds good. So these are their words. The SASC support and advocacy programs, which faced closure over the summer, has been fully operating since September 4th, 2018. We are almost fully staffed. The team is composed by one longstanding member, two new support workers, one longstanding team member, and we are looking to hire one more worker. Our support and advocacy team provides confidential and emotional support to people of all genders, their friends, and their families affected by oppression, sexualized, and gender-based violence support. We are available for support 7 days a week.
So far, our numbers and statistics have shown that in September alone, we offered 11 appointments, which were 1 hour each, 58 drop-ins, which were also 1 hour each, and these include hospital accompaniments and 20 indirect support services, such as emailing and connecting with survivors over the phone. In October, we offered 29 appointments, 40 drop-ins, and 30 indirect support services, such as connecting over emails and phone, and connecting with other resources on campus on behalf of survivors.
Totally. So these, like, numbers, like 58 drop-ins in September itself kind of demonstrates, like, what would have been lost had support services been closed,
mm-hmm.
And the survivors that would have been abandoned had it happened. But mm-hmm. I guess because we've all worked really hard to get the SASC back to the place that it was, we're in a better place now, which is really good, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, the summer was definitely a challenging time for Nikki, myself, and also Alex, who was here as well. Mm-hmm. Alex is the Healthier Masculinities Coordinator. Really awesome, great programming.
We wish he was here today, but he couldn't. He was busy.
He is busy. Yeah,
very
sleeping.
Busy. He is sleeping.
But That is to say that we really appreciate the community coming and supporting such a vital service. And I know that we have, the UBC equivalent to SASC, which is SV Pro, and obviously they're also doing really great work as well. But I think that there's always going to be a space for somewhere with an organization like SASC.
Yeah, given that we are, a lot of the issues that we address require the position of being grassroots and kind of community-led, I think that's what's so special about the SASC. And I think that's what the community kind of understands and knows about the SASC, is that we can address things from a community-based standpoint, which is why when support services were attacked, the community responded so well. Because it was like almost an attack on us was an attack on them. Mm-hmm. It's not to say that SV Pro doesn't, obviously SV Pro does too. But we have different positionalities and we have different places on campus and different demographics, I guess, that we address.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And outreach statistics that I unfortunately don't have exact statistics, but I can talk about the different outreach projects that we've been doing and the high volume of applicants that we've received.
Yeah. Yeah, so over the summer, we thought that I was hoping that we'd get 20 people applying to volunteer and be like, well, cool, take them all.
Most, yeah.
Yeah, 25, so optimistic. But we had over 100 people apply to volunteer this year, which we unfortunately couldn't accept everybody just because the nature of not having enough work for 100 people to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes Healthy Masculinities volunteers as well. But at SASC, we have how many? 32?
We have 33 volunteers. Volunteers within our department, mm-hmm. quote-unquote department, and then Alex says around 20-ish. So mm-hmm. it's a total of 54, mm-hmm. I think 54 mm-hmm. volunteers total that we have between the two of us, which is more than double the numbers that we had last year mm-hmm. Or any other numbers, which I also, again, think is a reflection of the community kind of realizing where the SASC is at, because to have application numbers go from 25 people to 100 within 1 year mm-hmm. is it's truly astounding. And I remember this one day, Tintin, you probably remember this too. We were in the support room, you and I and Alex, trying to figure out how we were going to give these positions to, because we didn't want to turn anybody away. Obviously, these people were gracious mm-hmm. enough to give us their free labor and free time. So I didn't want to turn anybody away, and we were trying to figure out all the different ways we could incorporate them into the SASC and have a big SASC family, so we just on a whim created a new volunteer position.
And we're seeing how that's going today.
Yeah.
This is what happens when you let us do things.
Yeah, this is what happens when you let a bunch of 20-year-olds run an organization.
Yeah.
Yeah. The new position is called the Projects and Events Committee. And they're doing a bunch of cool projects. I think that mm-hmm. they have one coming up for Trans Day of Remembrance. I think they're partnering up with various campus communities, including the Pride Collective, mm-hmm. to have an event, to have a panel. Yeah.
Oh, a panel. Okay.
I think it's a panel.
I should have known that. Now I know that.
Yeah. Yeah, just addressing some of, especially particularly as of late, the attacks on the trans community by the administration in the States, but also just in general violence faced by trans folks, especially trans folks of color.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think in January, well, I don't know what's going on in December because usually there's exams and stuff, so it's probably more quiet. But I know that in January is Sexual Assault Awareness Month,
mm-hmm.
so we're likely partnering with other organizations on campus to do that as well.
Totally, and that's where the new volunteer position will be coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We've also been doing outreach with Greek Life, Tintin and I.
Yeah.
Which is very exciting. Alex, our Healthier Masculinities Coordinator, is doing workshops with the fraternities, and then Tintin and I, with the help of our coordinator, Jennifer Gagnon, are doing workshops with sororities every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday. Including on Halloween, that's 2 days ago, so mm-hmm. we did that. How would you say they've been going?
I would say, and this is just based on my past experience, given that I also did this last year, so I was doing some of the workshops with sororities last year, it's been way more positive. The response has been way more positive than last year. And this is definitely a good thing. I don't know what happened or what changed. Maybe people are just willing to have this conversation a bit more, or maybe our mm-hmm. techniques and our facilitation styles have differed and maybe we've just gotten better at it. But yeah, the conversations we're having now are way more productive, way more fruitful.
Totally. Very engaging. I'm not going to say hesitant, but I was worried that we would not be received well. I guess that speaks to my own preconceived notions of what the Greek community has been, but honestly, from the sorority's perspective, everyone has been super engaging, super receptive,
mm-hmm.
And just the points brought up are just phenomenal and really great, mm-hmm. great contributions to the discussion of sexualized violence, especially in the context of Greek life, which is also really important to think through too.
Yeah, And I think that it's hard to go into a community that's so, like already so robust and just being like, hey, like, we're here to talk about some of the issues that you guys have, like, in a very outsider perspective. Mm-hmm. And it's been really wonderful to be, for the most part, like, quite welcomed and, you know, like, have had a lot of, when we're presenting, like, I don't feel like I'm being disrespected in any way. Like, it's really wonderful. And totally. I think that they're quite engaged. I don't know. What do you think? Because this is your first time facilitating with all the sororities and stuff.
Well, I think it's been great. I think the fact that I think what's really particularly nice about it is that all of the workshops have been super organized. We know exactly what we're talking to. We have a set, like, questions. We have a set workshop, and it's, like, particular dates with the particular sorority. So nothing has felt like I'm just being thrown into a workshop and just expected to deliver. Everything on, like, the sorority's end of things has been, like, fantastic. And for the most part, even though we've had two sets of workshops, one have been like Wednesday evenings and one was at Sunday at 9 a.m. So very not ideal times for learning. If it's at 7 p.m. on a Wednesday when you have like a million other things to do in terms of school and also like extracurriculars, it's not a good time to be engaged. And I'm still surprised by how engaged they were. And I think maybe part of that is because we are doing it in their, like, weekly meetings that every Greek chapter has. They meet it every Wednesday. So we're, like, we're coming into a community, and they already know each other, and they're, like, expected to, I guess, behave in a certain way within their meeting structure. So that is probably helps to why they're being a little bit more respectful, as opposed to, like, scheduling us outside of a time where they maybe wouldn't necessarily have those set of guidelines within their meetings. Same with the Sunday morning one. Sunday morning at 9 a.m. is really the worst time to learn, or the worst time for even me to be, like, engaging in a workshop. But it still went pretty well, yeah.
Yeah. I think that we also have what other workshops have we done recently? Oh, yesterday I did the one with the Chinese Varsity Club.
Oh, how did that go?
Good. I thought that the Chinese Varsity Club was a sporting club.
It's not.
It's not. It's the biggest club at UBC.
Yeah.
Shout out to Chinese Varsity Club.
Shout out to the CVC.
Yeah. They were really engaged as well, I think. Miley did a great job. Miley's one of our volunteers. Also, shout out to Miley. I think we did a good job. We had a good rhythm.
Yeah, we've had numerous ones. I did one with the Arts Undergraduate Society, so the AUS, a week and a half ago. That went pretty well, too. Again, on a Sunday, really not ideal times to be doing workshops on a weekend because nobody's, like, brain is checked in to talk about, like, the discourse of sexual assault, especially because it's a heavy topic. But pretty engaging, pretty good stuff. And we have, like, lots of upcoming ones. I can even open the outreach calendar and we can see what we have.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting, though, because, like, I feel like, to a certain extent, I have engaged in this conversation so many times because, like, it's actually my job to do it. So it's not to say that I'm like, wow, I'm surprised that people don't talk about this, but I think it is sometimes a surprise that people don't talk about it as much.
Totally.
I feel very, like, grateful that I get to facilitate those conversations between people that maybe don't have a lot of experience or, like, knowledge about it, which is, like, totally fine because no one, like, is going to unless they actually engage in the conversation.
Absolutely. And Jennifer, I think Tintin and I were having this conversation a couple of days ago about, I guess, where we are at with our level of knowledge in sexual assault and how sometimes the workshops feel very, like, to us, they don't feel that fruitful or they feel kind of at a stale place, but then the audience, like, loves it. And they're like, wow, that was so engaging. I've never thought about that before. And I guess it just, like, really gets me to think about my, like, where I'm at and where other folks are at and, like, how I could be better fostering their learning by not just being like, these workshops aren't even that good. But so our workshops are fantastic. I don't want to slander. Our workshops are fantastic. And they're clearly, I think they've been pretty well received by various UBC communities. But I guess when you do them so often, you're like, is this even engaging? What's the point of this anymore? But it's at that point when the community is so, like, kind and supportive, that's when you're like, wow, we're making a difference.
Yeah.
We're doing it, which is really good.
Feels good. What do we have coming up?
We have in November, improv workshop.
Oh, right.
It's mostly sororities, I think, coming up in November. Also, November is a bad time, but we just went to the Mining Justice Conference, so we boothed there, which was really great.
Mm-hmm.
It was the UBC students who are Mining Justice, which were mostly law students in Allard, and then UBC Social Justice Center, which I named before, came together and flew out three indigenous land offenders from all over Turtle Island. one person, one woman from Peru, one from Guatemala, and then Cana Hus Manuel from the unceded Sacbotmac territories. Mm-hmm. They all talked about mining on their unceded lands, essentially, and the devastations that it's brought, mm-hmm. and the complicitness of UBC specifically, mm-hmm. But Vancouver mining corporations like Goldcorp and Hudbay and Imperial Metals. Imperial Metals had a huge disaster in Sacbotmac territories, left a huge ecological devastation with, like, if you see the photos, which I encourage you to go look at the Imperial Mine disaster, mm-hmm. In Mount Polly and see just like how bad it looked and just like the devastations of entire forests and unceded indigenous lands and how it affected disproportionately their drinking water. But also in Guatemala, too, Hudbay and Angelica Chak, who flew out, and her case against Hudbay because they had like murdered her husband for being mm-hmm. also an indigenous land defender, and all these different ways that I guess sexual assault and sexualized violence are a huge part of violence on the land, especially on indigenous communities and indigenous women, as we kind of tried to talk about in our land acknowledgement.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that this is maybe a bit off topic, but the most striking part of the talks during the conference were just basically like when they got to talk about like what it's like to be, you know, both a mother and also a land protector, mm-hmm. A water protector. Like, it's just so touching and incredible that that work is so deeply connected. Like, work with the land is like connected with domestic and effective labor in so many ways. And yeah, it was very inspiring and healing, despite the fact that they were talking about things that were so, you know, personal to themselves and so hard to talk about, because mm-hmm. it's definitely re-traumatizing, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I guess one final note being that colonialism is like always used attack on bodies, particularly like women's bodies, indigenous women's bodies, as a way of getting to the land, as a way of dispossessing mm-hmm. indigenous people yeah. from the lands. So I think these conversations are extremely important to have, with the full acknowledgement that I'm a settler on these lands too, and I'm my own complicit. I'm also complicit in displacing indigenous folks, even though I'm a person of color. It's like still very tied together, mm-hmm. My role here yeah. as an uninvited guest.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll be back on CITR 101.9 FM.
Back on my beat. on my beat, back on my beat, party for one.
Okay, well, welcome back. So you just heard Carly Rae Jepsen's wonderful new song, Party for One.
She's great. I still really want to, if you identify as a leftist and have claimed Carly Rae Jepsen, please find me and explain to me why, but I'm on board. I want to know exactly why.
If you really want to know.
I do want to know.
There's a variety of, there's a conspiracy theory that my roommate told me about basically how, like, Carly Rae Jepsen has written the same song, or, like, songs about the same person for the past, like, 10 years, and it goes down like this. It's like a film. Like, it's like a dramatic, like, it's like a, like,
including
I'll send
Call
it
Me
to
Maybe?
You. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's all about the same.
So
well,
sorry.
Apparently. But I don't, I like, I don't know. I think Carly's more diverse and more in-depth than that.
I think so, too.
Yeah. But anyway, so we're going to talk about Greek life a bit more and about the workshops that we've been doing and kind of how they have come to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Do you want me to?
Yeah, go for it.
So I don't know if you folks remember, last year during the AMS elections, Max Holmes, who's now the VP Academic and University Affairs for the AMS, was running for his current position and, I guess, was in the process of getting an endorsement from the IFC, which is the fraternity, I guess, the International Fraternity Council. I don't actually know what the acronym exactly stands for, but it's the, like, it's the fraternity council. And he just, yeah, he received a lot of violence, I guess, from them as a survivor himself. A lot of not even, like, hidden rape culture tones of,
overt
acts of violence, particularly as, like, a male survivor, too. I think they face, like, a difficult challenge in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, which led to Max essentially rejecting his endorsement from the IFC. It was a big scandal, and then the IFC president had to step down because of it. So out of that, and here's where the SASC fits into it, out of that scandal came the IFC coming to the SASC, asking us to educate their members about sexual violence and sexual assault, and our then coordinator, Noor, shout out to Noor, she's in Western getting her master's right now, Noor essentially told them we had no capacity and they could come back to us in May while this was happening in March, and then we could discuss what we could do in the years coming forward.
Yeah, and so it's been really wonderful meeting with the sorority leaders, executives, over the summer, and we kind of have just planned how we're going to deliver these workshops to, I don't even know what the numbers are going to be like at the end of this, like how many people will be receiving this education, but it's a lot of coordinating to, you know, talk for an hour and a half to 90 people every Wednesday and like having to split up the time because there's not enough Wednesdays for the number of sororities that there are.
Yeah.
And a lot of this couldn't be done without our wonderful volunteers and
and Alex, too, who's doing, I think, the brunt of the work with the fraternities because I think that's what one thing worth noting is that while the sororities we can expect to be a little bit more receptive, Alex is doing incredible work with the fraternities, including like addressing rape culture kind of in like a very like head-on kind of way, and I've sat through his workshop and it's like a fantastic workshop. I really love.
I agree.
So the frat members are getting a good education and they're in good hands. I think Alex is great.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that it'll be interesting to see, like, not to be like come this election season, but like actually like when, you know, if elections come again, like if the IFC will do endorsements, if they'll acknowledge the stuff that happened last year.
True.
Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Really, who knows? Student politics are...
Yeah, student politics are so much.
Yeah. But yeah.
Do we want to move on to Ben Shapiro?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sorry. In advance.
Yeah.
We're talking about Ben Shapiro.
Content warning, Ben Shapiro.
Absolutely. So on Wednesday, this Halloween, October 31st, Ben Shapiro came to campus in the Chan Center with very expensive tickets. The Free Speech Club brought him over. He gave a talk.
So I'm obviously not privy to what he had said in his talk, but two separate events kind of happened on campus that were sort of a way of, you know, like peacefully, so to speak, protesting or like, you know, creating like community engagement and activism against, you know, the violent language and the violent like rhetoric that Ben Shapiro and many conservative commentators, not to say that, not to paint with like a broad brush, but that people, conservative commentators often say about certain communities
on
campus.
To say the least.
Yeah.
I was in the, there was 14 different groups that came together, sponsored, quote unquote sponsored, or helped bring together the one of the main events that happened, which was a Halloween party in Abdul Lada. During Shapiro's talk, 14 different organizations from campus, and I was in the original meeting as to like pitched why this actually was happening and why we should have a party instead of protesting. And I guess the idea behind this, and I think this is really beautiful, was that different activists, like student activists on campus, were like protesters of right-wing commentators often get filmed and doxxed and completely mocked on camera, and it gets posted on the internet and can be really extremely violent. It's very obviously there's no consent in filming these people, and so they didn't want to like have another night where these already exhausted student activists go out and put their life in danger. Most of us, I guess, queer and racialized. And so instead they wanted to have like a celebration of social justice, and we all thought that this would be like the biggest like FU to Shapiro, was to, instead of spending our labor and our energies like protesting him directly, we could just have a good time and have the funds go to causes that he would hate. So it went to a Palestinian cause, a mutual aid for Palestine, and the Puerto Rico in response to the events last year with the hurricane. That party happened. There was also a teach-in. I don't know if you want to talk about the teach-in or if you want me to talk about the teach-in.
I don't know a ton about the teach-in, to be honest. So maybe
fair enough. The teach-in was done by one particular, I don't know if they want me to name them because I don't know. I guess I'm just not going to name them. I'm going to remain anonymous, even though folks probably know who they are. One particular trans student of color, with the help of a professor from the GRSJ department, had a teach-in, like a very peaceful teach-in outside of Shapiro's event, to talk about why having Shapiro on campus is not a matter of free speech and where the lines between free speech and hate speech and like lies and all the different ways marginalization and violence on these communities happens when we have someone like Shapiro come to campus. So these two events happen, and obviously labor has to be acknowledged that like a trans student of color put in all that effort and like essentially risked their lives to go up there. But yeah, so as a way of like teaching to the community that may like the sound of the idea of free speech and thus support Shapiro, to talk about the actual implications of having someone like that on campus.
Yeah, and I think that, I don't know, having like Ben Shapiro on campus and like just having, you know, like the pro-life people and like all these like protests that are often generally, you know, violent in nature or, you know, very explicit in terms of like what their message is and like who they're targeting. It just is obviously upsetting, but it's incredible that there is such potent activism that comes on in the community here. So I just remember, I think about like last year and the preceding years, activism when it came to the free, or no, the pro-life protesters. I don't know if you know, you've definitely seen them,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally.
The people who like bring the, you know, like aborted fetus images and they just are right in front of the nest where like everybody's walking through, and under the guise of like free speech is why we want to, you know, make sure that people are witnessing these like really graphic images, most of which aren't even images of abortions. But anyway.
Yeah, totally. I think that's why student activism is so like great, is that like our ability to create community and like address different needs from a community-based standpoint. And I think the SASC has a really special place in that. Once again, being a community-based grassroots organization, addressing violence from the need in a positioned in a way where we address the community's needs to, like, reiterate myself for the 50th time. But yeah.
Yeah.
Discorder Magazine presents Hail Discordia, 35 years of Discorder Magazine. This event showcases the diverse cover artwork in Discorder Magazine's 400-plus issue run from 1983 to present day. Catch the rest of the showcase running from October 29 to November 22nd, Monday to Friday, 12 to 5 p.m. We'll see you there.
So something that I think we failed to talk about earlier is just a bit of information about the SASC. I think that was a little bit glossed over, but here
we should have definitely opened up at this. But for those of you that don't know, the SASC is an acronym for the Sexual Assault Support Center. We're an AMS service, and we are located on the third floor of the Nest.
Mm-hmm. In room 3127, our hours are 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., 7 days a week, which match the UBC hospital hours or the sexual assault service hours as well.
Yeah. So if you ever need a hospital accompaniment, we can offer those within the hours that the hospital is open.
Yeah, and what else do we have? We have crisis, emotional short-term and safety planning for survivors of sexual violence. We also offer support for people who are supporting survivors.
We provide services like court accompaniments, medical accompaniments, police accompaniments, and advocate for students on behalf of survivors towards the institution to get things like academic concessions, housing concessions, and different accommodations that students might need.
Mm-hmm. We also do off-campus referrals, so for if the survivor's looking for something that maybe we can't provide or maybe SV Pro can't provide, something off campus might be a better option, and we do referrals to those. In terms of education and outreach, we have wonderful workshops as well as events. We also have our Healthier Masculinities program that we kind of talked about with Alex. We're also doing amazing work.
Can I talk about something new that we're offering? We have practicum students from the expressive art therapy, from like an expressive art therapy school in Switzerland, but they're like also locally based here in Vancouver. We have two practicum students right now giving free sessions of art therapy, expressive art therapy, to anyone that's interested. You can make an appointment by calling. It's really, really interesting, and it's open to anyone that would like the service, regardless of whether or not you identify as a survivor of sexual assault. But it's pretty cool, and I think they're here on Wednesdays.
Yes. Thank you, Nikki. I forgot.
Oh, no worries. This is more of a newer service, yeah.
What else do we have?
We have, so, education and outreach, which is what Tintin and I do, and we offer numerous workshops like responding to disclosures of sexual assault, how to be an active bystander, setting healthy boundaries.
There's a variety of workshops. For the most part, we just respond to what people want, I would say.
Creating safer spaces, all these different things. Consent, obviously. Consent and rape culture, sexual violence, these are all topics that come up with in all of our workshops. Yeah, so we offer numerous ones. And also by request, so if you want us to customize a workshop, that's obviously always doable, too.
Mm. We also have our wonderful blog that our office volunteers write.
Mm-hmm.
We just had a blog post about, I think, Halloween.
Yeah.
So, which is very timely, considering Halloween is 2 days ago. Not at the time of airing, however.
2 days ago, time of recording. Resource area, and our resource area includes everything from, like, written resources and, like, pamphlets and resources on, like, how to get help or the various resources on campus. But we also have menstrual products. We have safer sex products. We have pregnancy tests. We have totes that you can grab. If you want a tote,
so
you can drop by and grab a SASC tote. And like SASC paraphernalia, too. So if you're ever on campus and need any of those, the SASC is a place that you can go to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess that's most of the services that we provide for the most part. We also wanted to talk about maybe what, like, you know,
a day in the life
of working at SASC is. It's really different depending on I suppose, the season, the on or off season.
Yeah, true.
That is to say that over the summer it looks really different than what it looks like working during the school year.
Yeah.
But we can tell you what it looks like now.
From our perspective, also to note that we're not support workers, so we can't give you what it looks like from the perspective of someone that does support work, that we're the educators. So it looks completely different. It's a completely different role, obviously, because we address completely different needs. But maybe you can talk about.
Yeah, so I think that most of the work that we do is pretty much preparing or organizing workshops. So that could be meeting with different organizations on campus that have requested workshops and like talking about like how to best address the learning goals that they have. And then also just carrying out the workshops. So that includes prepping volunteers and letting them know like what the workshop's going to look like. And then, doing the dang thing, which is usually about an hour and a half sort of activity. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. It's hard
to recall. Lend a lot of, it's a difficult position to kind of sum up, because I guess we lend a lot of our labor also to whoever needs us within the SAS, so we help out our coordinator in whatever capacity she needs us to help out. Whether that be coordinating some of the volunteers or coordinating some of, or emailing back and forth with various organizations to like book spaces and book the workshops, a lot of communicating back and forth with organizations to see what exactly it is that they need. So obviously like the needs of sororities are much different than the needs of TAs that we've given training to, which we have. The UBC and history, the UBC History and Geography Department reached out and we give workshops to their TAs, and how a TA might receive disclosures is different than how a sorority member might. And how to be a bystander within a sorority context is different than that of a TA. So you can just imagine how vastly different it is. And we did one for like the English Language Institute, where it's a great learning experience because we had to like learn how to like cater our workshops, which are really social justice lingo focused and super verbose. And we had to like learn how to cater that to someone that, folks that English is not not the first language and they don't speak it fluently, and how we can have those conversations across differences of language and race. And I think that was really interesting too.
Yeah. So I think a lot of our job is pretty much just like meeting people where they're at for the most part, and like trying to make sure that, you know, that they're getting the most out of what it is that we're trying to teach, and hopefully that they can continue these conversations outside in their own lives and like getting their friends involved if they so choose to also engage in this conversation as well. It's hard to like recall what a day in the life of this job is, because it's not like a desk job, it's not like a 9-to-5 or anything. You kind of make your own hours.
Totally.
A bit tricky.
Yeah, it's like been a lot of, I think, team building, because there's a lot of newer folks within the team, so getting to know everyone, but also relationship building, because I guess the closures severed a lot of ties and broke a lot of trust and relationships within various communities on campus. So it's also like a lot of that too. It's a lot of outreach in that sense to like get to mend relationships and to work towards a better future, I think.
That's
a lot of it too. I think most of that work our manager is doing. Shout out to Sandra.
Big shout out to Sandra.
We love Sandra. I love Sandra so much.
I know Sandra's like the reason why SASC is together.
Absolutely.
I don't think we could have hired a better person.
Wholeheartedly, we could not have found a better. And her job is not easy. What she walked into, where the SASC was at, even in August, is not where it is now. Like, we have the expressive art therapist because of her. We have relationships with people because of her. We have a full staff because of her. I think
and that's a labor of
and that is
so much
labor.
Love.
Absolutely. Completely labor of love. Sandra, racialized woman, indigenous woman, again, putting, like, essentially doing everything like that institutions have failed to do, which I think women of color are so often left in spots where they have to mend that.
And I think a lot of that work is often unacknowledged and very much swept under the rug, because that kind of labor feels so invisible but is actually very tangible in terms of the people who are accessing that service. Yeah,
totally. The services of the SASC were completely tangible. Like we were talking about, it's really important that Greek life get their education, but it's also important that survivors get low barrier support on campus, because different places have shown that that is, like, survivors are left on the margins so many times. And survivors are already marginalized because often they're racialized, often they're queer. So even accessing services is difficult. So shout out to Sandra for fixing the SASC essentially single-handedly. We love her.
Yeah. Over the summer, there was a lot of moments where I think Nikki can speak to this as well, where we were literally like, we don't know what's going to happen. Like, yeah. This could just be done. And because everybody at that point had either quit or like took in stress leave besides you, myself, and Alex.
None of us were support workers. So we were like left in a place. We were left without a support team essentially, even though support services were restored, even though it was reversed, the decision was reversed, the trust was broken past the point of repair. So a lot of people, justifiably, either took a leave or just quit. So Tintin, Alex, and I were like, what's going to happen? And Sandra happened, which was the best thing that could have happened.
True.
So we're back, baby. We're back.
Yeah.
We're looking for one more support worker, actually. Maybe this is a good
time. Oh, this is a good time to plug. Yeah, okay. If anyone is looking for a job in support work, working for a really rad organization.
Covering between 25 hours and 28 hours of work a week. And the deadline is November 15th. So come join the support team at the SASC.
Come join.
Thanks.
And you get to work with me and Nikki, which is, I think, a gift.
A huge gift. Totally.
You're so welcome. I think that... I don't know, like speaking to my own experience working at the SASC, I volunteered for SASC for 2 years. I got hired last year and I'm continuing to work there now. It's just been one of the best organizations that I've been a part of at UBC and has definitely, definitely fostered a lot of my politics as well as a lot of the things that I think I want to go into when I, you know, move past university or graduate, so to speak.
I don't know. What are your thoughts with your experience at SASC?
Yeah, it's been absolutely, like, labor of love is a really good way of, I think, phrase to describe it. It's like it's a lot of emotional labor. It's a lot of work, but it's so fulfilling. When Tintin and I leave a workshop and, like, you just feel that there's been a difference made within that, it's just, like, there's such a high, like, wow. Like, learning took place. And, like, even if one person that didn't know what consent was learns what consent is, like, that's huge, right? Like, that has, like, astronomical effects. And same with the support team. Like, when a survivor gets the support that they need to be able to heal from trauma and heal from all the different ways survivors are left to fend for themselves, essentially. Like, that's also huge. Our job is great. It's a lot of work, but it's a great job. It's very fulfilling.
I guess that concludes a bit of that concludes our 24 hours of student power segment. We're gonna leave folks off with a song that really, I think, speaks to activism and speaks to all of the ways that you can overcome the difficulties and through self-care. And there's just like so many layers to
the
song.
The song is fantastic. I want to give a story. Earlier I talked about that one day where Tintin, Alex, and I were in a room and we didn't know what to do with our large applicant, our volunteer applicant. So we just like listened to this one version of this song. The song is "Don't You Want Me" by the Human League. And in this one particular version, I'm not going to play it, but there's a version on YouTube where every lyric is, you were working as a waitress in a cocktail bar.
Yeah.
In every part. So I really recommend you go listen to that version.
It's really good music for when you're spiraling.
Yeah, which is what we were doing in the summer, but this music kind of got us through.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Human League. I'm going to play it.
Wait. Thank you for listening, and we will hopefully see you around soon. Goodbye.
You are. interest in a cookie.